Hello, I'm John Charles from the Poison Pen Bookstore in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I'd like to welcome you to another of our virtual author events with two of our store's favorite authors, Susan Mallory and Susan Elizabeth Phillips. I'll be chatting with both authors, but we also are encouraging any questions you might have through Facebook Live. And before we start our conversation, I do have to take a moment and play commercial huckster and say we do have both authors' books in the store. Susan's is actually on order because it doesn't publish, Susan Mallory's book doesn't publish till August. But we are encouraging you to order copies of Dance Away With Me or The Friendship List from the Poison Pen Bookstore. They will be signed, they'll be exclusive, they'll be something you want to keep forever. So if you get a chance, please do stop by the store's website and order one or both copies for your friends as well. And with that commercial out of the way, let me please welcome internationally best-selling, world-famous authors Susan Mallory and Susan Elizabeth Phillips. Welcome, ladies.
Hi, everyone.
I'm going to start off with a few questions for you, and feel free to ask each other questions too, like whether you like your editor or what your agent gets for commissions, things like that. But my first question for both of you, and we'll start with Susan Mallory, is who were you before you became a published author?
Oh, that's really easy. I was a college student. I started writing in college, and I was going to be an accountant. That would have been so bad for the world and me. I started writing and I fell in love with it and I graduated. And I graduated May and I published in August of that year and I never looked back. So thank goodness. Although the business thing has been very helpful. I can read my royalty statements and I can't read my contracts. I fall asleep on page six. That's why I have an agent. But yes, I was in college and I've been a writer my whole life. I have no skill set, so I need this to work for me because then what? So yeah.
Susan Elizabeth.
I was, when I started my first book, I was home with two children, a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old. Before that, I was a high school speech and drama teacher, and English teacher, but my dream was never to be a writer. I really, really, really wanted to be a movie star.
Sure.
Yeah. Didn't exactly work out.
Well, we're luckier for that.
I no, Susan, I thought you actually had accounting practice. I mean, I thought you'd actually been one.
No, I worked part-time in college, but
Oh.
no, I walked out of my CPA exam. You do have to do a review course
Right.
to pass the exam, and I walked out the night of accounting theory because you don't just have to learn accounting, you have to know why. No one needs to know why. There's some crazy things. So I went home and thought, no, this is it. I'm going to do the writing thing. And
You
that was
passed
it.
the exam? Did you actually take the exam?
I did not take the exam. I did not finish the review course. So no, I just left. I was done. I did graduate.
That's good.
So.
Well, there are plenty of accountants, but there's only one you.
Oh, that's so sweet. You're so good to me.
Hey, John, can I tell the story of how we met? How Susan and I, not how we met, but how we actually connected.
Please do.
We had met, but we really hadn't had any encounter. And we were both in Berlin at a romance conference with our German readers. Just a wonderful conference, so much fun, but it wasn't exactly organized like we're used to. And somebody told us that we were doing a workshop, and we go into this room, and there we are. There's no moderator. There is an entire big audience full of people, and Susan and me, who haven't even talked before this about what we're going to do. So it was kind of a trial by fire, and it was really, really fun for us because, in some ways, our process is very similar, well, our end product, but the process is so different. And she is the screwiest process you have ever heard in your life.
She's so flaky. She's so flaky. It's like there's a spectrum. There's the normal end. I'm there. There's the flaky end. She lives there. She has like a house and a boat dock right at that end.
Have you ever heard anal retentive? That is the way she writes. Ah, I want to tell you,
Yeah.
it's scary.
Yes, we keep the world going. It's important. We
Both of
provide the structure for the flaky people.
you got your start as writers in a way that many aspiring writers would envy. Can you tell us a little bit about your first book's publication?
Oh, you go, because mine isn't very inspiring.
Mine's actually pretty cool. I started writing with a friend, and we had written just about, I don't know, 120 some pages of this manuscript. And the friend had a friend had a friend who was an editor, and somebody was chatting to her, and she said that we could call her. She was just being nice. She didn't really care. And so we sold our first book, which was the only book I collaborated on. It was a historical romance. It was written during the true bodice ripper time, which is a real genre in romance literature, that period. And it sold in 3 weeks.
Oh my God.
That story, the last time I told that story was at a luncheon, and there were some French rolls that were thrown in my direction. So I haven't told it since at an actual
luncheon. Well, yeah, I would imagine people just fall off their chair, and it's like, how does that happen?
Yeah. So what about you? You were really young.
I was very young. And I was living in Los Angeles and going to the big advantage of starting to write in college was I could go to seminars. I could go to a weekend thing. My brain was absorbing like a sponge. Whereas now after about 40 minutes, I just wander away and they never find me. So I was doing all this stuff, and I went to a conference in Long Beach and met an editor from Berkeley who, I pitched her my book. She said, send it to me. And I had already sent it to Harlequin. It was historical as well. We were all doing that. And I'd already sent it to Harlequin Historical, and I knew they were going to buy it. So I didn't send it to the Berkeley editor, which is so dumb. And went home, and about 5 weeks later, the book was rejected. And then I was crushed. And then I went to my first national conference, which that year was in San Francisco, which tells you how the first San Francisco, not the second, for those of you keeping track. And there's a room where they sell books. There's research books and fiction. And it's just, I went there first. I checked in, put my bag down, and went to the book room. And I'm walking, and I hear this voice saying, it's very difficult to buy books if authors don't send them. And I turned around, and it was the Berkeley editor. And I was like, I was so young, and I felt guilty. So I'm sure I, you know, had that look of having stolen cookies or something. And I could not run into her. Like, everywhere I went, there she was. So I sent her the book, and she bought it 2 weeks later. And all I could think of is, I could have gone to that conference published. And if you've been unpublished and gone to a conference, you know, to cross through that magic door and have a published author ribbon on your badge is just, it is the keys to the city times a million. And I was so mad at myself, but I learned a good lesson. So that's my story. It's like, send the book, send the book, send it.
Okay, tell us a little bit about your new book that brought you here today. For Susan Elizabeth, that's Dance Away With Me. And for Susan Mallory, it's The Friendship List. Susan Elizabeth.
Well, Dance Away With Me just went on sale on Tuesday. And it's the story of Tess. Tess is a midwife. She's also a grieving young widow. She's isolated herself in this remote cabin above the town of Tempest, Tennessee, and all she wants is to be left alone. The hero of this book is a man named Ian Hamilton North IV. For Pete's sake. This is my kid. I mean, I guess I should have put my phone on Do Not Disturb. God. Oh, that. Okay, sidebar. Before I tell you the rest about Dance Away With Me. So, since I've been doing these outside, I've dealt with trains, leaf blowers. And when I did one yesterday, there's this guy over there in the parking lot who's calling to me. He sees me here to go out and unlock the gate to let him in. So... anyway, so back to this book. Ian North is a famous American street artist. If anybody's interested in or knows the work of Banksy, the great English street artist, kind of modeled on him. And he's at a real crisis in his life. All he wants to do is to be left alone. So we have these two characters who just want to be by themselves, and that can't happen because there's going to be another life that they have to deal with. They have to make the sacrifice for. And we also have a lot of secondary characters. We have this really cool old coffee house with a broken chimney, and we have some teenagers. We have a town that's very suspicious of outsiders. So Dance Away With Me is one of those books that I think is my favorite kind. It hits that boundary between romance and women's fiction. And that is a boundary. As Susan writes on that boundary, I do. It's where I love writing and it's where I love reading. So that's kind of where I am right now, my favorite thing.
Susan Mallory.
Well, first of all, I had a chance to read Dance Away With Me. I got a copy a few weeks ago and it's amazing. It's a fabulous book. So I give a big thumbs up. I love the town. It's a interesting setting, which always is nice, but it's an unusual setting. We don't usually set our books there, especially for me, because I either do Southern California or I'm doing the Pacific Northwest. I've tried to write on the East Coast, they won't let me. But so the Tennessee setting was just fun and it was so interesting and it was so alive and such a part of what happened and all the characters. It was just one of those see, taste, feel books and I love that. So big thumbs up, it was great. The Friendship List was really fun. This is a book that I've had so much fun writing. Some books are easy, some books are hard. This book was fun, which I really appreciate when a book is fun, if they could all be fun, but some of them are hard. And it's the story of two friends, Ellen and Unity. And what's interesting is Susan and I, the zeitgeist is fascinating. We both have young widows in our books, although the journeys are very different. So Ellen is a single mom of a 16-year-old. Unity is a young widow and they've been best friends since practically birth. And Ellen finds out that her son, who's going to be a high school senior, she overhears him saying he can't go away to college because he can't leave her. He worries about her and that breaks her heart because of course she wants the best for him. She wants him to go away. I'm just going to miss him desperately, but she wants him to have that experience. And so she and Unity agree they're going to spend the summer challenging each other. Unity needs to get out of her widow rut, and Ellen needs to get out of her I don't have a life because I only care about my son rut, so that her son is free to go to college. And the Friendship List is how they challenge each other. They're not really crazy. They're crazy to them. They're scary to them things, but I'll just confess to you that one of Unity's challenges is to get a smartphone. So these are not totally wild things they have to do, but it's a lot of fun. And by spending this summer challenging themselves, they grow into who they should be as people. So it was tremendous fun to write. I loved it.
And I love, I love Friendship List. And one of the reasons I love about it is I love women's friendship novels. And this one is so great. And in a way, Unity and Tess do have something in common because they're both stuck in their widow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And both of these women, and Ellen is stuck in the past as her role as a single mother. So yeah. You have the journey that both of these women are making. And one of my favorite characters is Dagmar. So Dagmar is Unity's best friend. And Dagmar is an older woman, let's say much closer to my age. She's just crazy. I just love her. But the relationship between the women is great, but also you've got some great heroes in here. And with Thaddeus and Keith, the coach, Coach Keith, I kind of had a thing for him.
He was fun.
And I love also, you and I both, another similarity is you and I both have teenagers in this book. And I love teenagers.
And they're a big part of the story. They're not just walk-ons. Yeah. They're very significant to the story. And I like the cast. I like creating the family. And I know you do too, where you get to experience life from all these points of view. And it just makes the story richer.
Yes, yeah. And poor Keith trying to deal with being a single father raising this teenage daughter. And I'll tell you, there were a couple places I just wanted to smack him and say, dude, chill, right? And I love that with a hero. I love when we have a hero that is kind of screwing up in different areas and we can see it, but is such a good guy.
They mess up because they care. And,
right.
We have men in our lives and that's what they do. They mess up because they care.
Yeah, and you know what else? And this is not a spoiler because it happens early in the book. One of the other things that I really thought was interesting about this book is these two best friends have a really vicious fight toward the beginning. And it's the kind of fight that could have been a friendship ender, but it's not.
And I thought that was an interesting thing because as adult women, we don't fight with our friends. We don't. We deal with it. I mean, there are relationships where that happened, but in a healthier relationship, it is, I like to think there's more communication. And so a fight like that that comes out of the blue and is so personal.
In a way, yeah, very personal.
It could have gone either way. And obviously they have to get through it because it would have been a very tiny little novel if they had not. But that was really hard to write. And actually, that was one of the places I had the most revisions was I wasn't mean enough the first round. So I had to be meaner.
That's interesting. I can see why that would have been tough to write. That's super interesting. Yeah.
Okay, I have a question for both of you. For readers who might not be familiar with your books, if you could only choose three words to describe the flavor of your writing, what three words would you choose? Why don't we start with Susan Elizabeth?
Oh, for God's sake.
Okay, we'll start with Susan Mallory.
Yes.
I would say they are funny, they are heartwarming, and they are satisfying.
All right, I'd say happily ever after.
Yeah, there's that. This one especially because the road is harder, I think, than usual. It's really hard. I've been thinking about your book all day because I knew we'd talk about it. And I thought almost everything I have to say is a spoiler because it is so intricate. I can't imagine how many times you had to go back and weave things in because you won't plot your books. Because this is so intricately plotted. There are so many where I love when a story, when you're reading and it's like, well, that's interesting. And then 50 pages, 150 pages later, you're like, oh my God, that's why that's there. Which I appreciate as a writer, and hopefully, you know, readers don't, they're not going to think like that. They're just going to think, oh my gosh, that's so great. But the intricacy of these, it was so complex in the most satisfying way, but such an amazing ending. I love what happened, and I can't say, but I love what happened with the town, and I loved what happened to draw tourists into the town, which I'm not going to say. I just loved all of it. And I can't say that. there is the creature we talked about. That was fascinating how that ticked along and the different places we went.
I think, everybody wants me to write more Chicago Stars books, and I love those books. They tend to be more romps, but I've always said I won't write a Chicago Stars book if I can't bring something special to that series. And I frequently do these standalones. This is a pretty emotional book. There's certainly humor in it, but there's also some heartache in it. But I do enjoy reading that kind of a book as long as the writer does not screw me over at the end. And that's something, you never screw your readers over at the end. We know we get a satisfying ending. And that's the vow I won't break with my readers. It's always gonna be happily ever after.
I agree. And I don't get breaking that because I love my readers. And why would I do that to them? It seems mean-spirited. So I don't agree with it. But yes, that's what I loved was it is a hard road, but wow, when you get to that ending, in a way, the harder the road, the more satisfying the journey.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you both have different approaches to writing. And you each think your approach is the correct one.
That's true.
Make the case for it. And we'll start with you, Susan Mallory.
Well, I am a plotter on the spectrum of plotting and pantsing. I am all the way over and she is on the boat dock. But it really is how your brain works. And so I joke about she's wrong and she is, but there really is the way that works for your brain. So for me, I want to solve all my problems in advance. I want to know the story works. I want to know the characters are fulfilled. I want to know, I like structure. It makes me happy. It makes me feel safe. And more important, if I know the story is all there, then I can spend my free mental time thinking about the cool stuff, the stuff that wasn't there in the plot because I've worked out the structure. So I like a well-plotted story. I enjoy the intricacies of it. I like the challenge of it. It suits my brain. It just makes me happy. So people who like to plot, and that's simply is what it is. And you, if you like it as a writer, you need to get really good at it, because it is a powerful strength to have, and it will save you when things are falling apart in your book. If you have strong structure, or I had a recent experience with a book that's coming out next year where I was seven scenes from the end when my publisher said, yeah, we want you to write a different kind of book. And if, yes, that would have been my face had I not structured, but I was able to rip the book apart exactly as it was and then rewrite it, keeping what I could. It was a seamless rewrite. I won't say it was pleasant or easy, but it was seamless. And the ability to rip apart a book is very helpful if things change or go awry. So that is my case, but only if that's who you are.
So you actually know scene by scene, as I recall, what is going, yes, how it's going to unfold. How do you, I am mystified with how you can have that vision ahead of time. Is it unspooling in your head like a film reel, or how can you have that vision all the way through?
So here's an easier way to think of it. So my books are about 110 to 120,000 words. My plotting is 20,000 words. It is the world's tiniest first draft. So that's what I do. I, in essence, write a very short version of the book. And it takes me about 3 weeks to get that up and running. And once it's done, then every day I just go write the full version of it, but it's all figured out. And now I'm just making it bigger. I'm adding, but the basic story is there. And so yes, I just know it's, but I've written that 20,000 words to make it all, I make sure it works. I do not want to get to page 300 and find out I have no story. I write more books than you. I write 3 books a year. I do not have time to rewrite a book 3 and 4 times. I just don't. And mentally, I don't have that attention span. I would wander away. And my friends will all nod and say, that is 100% true. It's like, ooh, squirrel, I'm going over there. So, I get it plotted, I make sure it's sound, and then I go. I just write, because I try to make every day my best writing day. So that's it. I write, once it's plotted, I write 75 pages a week till it's done. And then I'm out.
With the I would love to be able to write like that, but my process is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Susan said, your brain is wired one way or another. I get this glimmer of an idea, and I sit down at my computer and I go, chapter one, well, what's going on here? And I start writing a couple of scenes, trying to figure out where I am. And then I go rewrite those scenes. And then I go on, and then I'll go to chapter two and I mess around there. And then I have to, everything's wrong in chapter one, so I have to go back and fix that. I'm doing that through the entire book. When I'm done, I usually don't have a lot of revision to do because I've had to do so much in process. But I don't know if it's because of my theater background. It's like I have to crawl inside the story. You know, we've heard talked about writing through the fog. I have to crawl inside the story to be able to see through. And what I love, actually, Susan and I have done workshops together since that event in Berlin, because when readers listen to the two of us talk about their process, I think they really understand that there is no one size fits all. It is what is going to work for you. Susan's process is way more efficient than mine, but I once tried to write a book like that and I never wrote the book. So it just depends on who you are and how your brain is wired.
It's true, because there's times, I mean, the book is fully plotted and I get, every day I sort of read ahead the next 6 scenes, and I may rearrange them, I may eliminate them. And the worst is when I realize a scene is missing, because then I have the non-plotting day where I kind of know what the scene has to be. I know what I need to accomplish, but I don't know anything. Where does it take place? Who is there? Whose point of view am I in? And it is a nightmare for me to write. And I always think about you when I do that. It's like, I couldn't do this. I couldn't do it. I could not do it. I hate those days when I come up with a scene. Yes. Sometimes I'll stop and I'll actually plot it. So the day I have to write it, it's less painful, but it's always ugly. I hate that day.
Yeah, and with me, when I hit those days, which is very, very frequently, I pull out my yellow pad and I kind of brainstorm on paper. And I argue, and the characters will argue with me, because I like to always make sure that the characters are being true to themselves, that they're being smart in who they are and making those choices. So the yellow pad helps me focus that brain so I'm not doing the squirrel thing all the time. Otherwise, I can't just sit and ponder.
Yeah, it is really, it's an interesting thing because sometimes, and I try not to think about this too much because it freaks me out, but our job, to me, at its most basic level, is to have someone we've never met in a situation we don't know or can't control feel the emotion we want them to feel at the specific time that they're supposed to feel it. That's really what a story is. We want you to have an experience, and it's an emotional experience. It's not just describing the tree, it's what the tree means. And I don't know how to do that, so I try not to think about it.
Right.
But that is, in essence, what it is, and it's bizarre. It is a crazy thing to do, and yet I am compelled, as are you. There's, you know,
yeah,
this is what we do. But yes, the process is brain-oriented, and I have accepted that at this point in time. I mean, I will never accept it fully because of your wrongness, but I accept that there are people who just simply don't have the plotting gift, and I feel bad for them.
And we accept your pity because we need it.
Yes, yes, because it's, I can't imagine. I mean, I know the whole revelation, and isn't it wonderful? But I have 1,000 ideas that I can't possibly write. What if you start one of those?
Yeah.
One of your own, I can't write it. It's like, that would be so sad.
It is what it is, right?
It is.
Both of you have been writing for quite a while. What do you know now as published writers that you wish you had known when you were first starting out? Susan Mallory, let's start with you.
Well, I know a lot, and some of it I wish I didn't. I think that what I know now is I can trust myself on the days it just feels terrible. I trust myself because I've done it enough to know that it's later when I read the book, I won't know what day was easy and what day was hard. I know it's okay to use the word was or passive verbs, which when I was first writing, that was like the death knell. Never use a passive verb if you don't have to. Mostly the thing I have learned over my career is success comes to those who don't give up. And that was true then, it is true now. The people who make it, the people whose books you see everywhere, are some of them are lucky, but most of them are very, very hard workers. And they work a lot, they work hard, they believe in what they do. And I think that's important. It's important to stay true to what we're doing. My readers give me their time, and that is the most precious thing they have in their lives. And I am grateful for it, and I respect that, and I give them back 100% of my best, and that is the deal we have. At least I think so. I hope they do too.
I think what I wish I had known is very similar to what Susan said. Trust yourself. It took me probably 10 books to trust myself when I hit those dark moments, knowing that I had bailed myself out before and I could do it again. And I think also just the discipline of putting the butt in the chair is, you cannot have a career if you know, people who don't know a lot of writers, the first thing they say is, do you have to be inspired to write? Which, you know, I try not to laugh in their face, but yeah, I mean, if I was inspired, I wouldn't sit down and write very often. So those things are both important to me, and I do feel, like Susan, just an enormous sense of gratitude to my readers, and I want to give them the best. And sometimes that's just going to take more effort than other days. But I'm a believer in you show up. And I also believe in when you put what you put on the screen the first time may be awful, but I trust myself to be a good editor. So the old adage, I can fix a bad page, I can't fix a blank one, that has been very powerful for me. So those are kind of the things that I wish I'd known at the beginning, and not written with so much fear. Gosh, I was so scared all the time that every book was my last book.
Social media has played a great role in many authors' lives, and both of you have kind of been pioneers and taking to it. Can you talk a bit about the role social media plays in your authorial lives?
Because Susan and I both have an international readership, and I know that I've discovered that my readers are pretty much the same all the world over. And Instagram has been one of my great ways of really reaching out to readers internationally, and I love that connection with them. Facebook has been more my English-speaking readers, and I post sometimes two or three times a day on Facebook. I like feeling like they're my friends, and I like that feeling of community that I established with social media. If any sites that are toxic, I just stay away from. I hardly ever have a toxic person, any kind of a troll show up on my page. If one did, I just would immediately delete it. So for me, my social media, it's a safe place, and it's just a lovely place to connect. I really enjoy it, and I'm really enjoying these Facebook Live events. Even though I can't be there on a real book tour now, I feel like I'm reaching so many more readers. I'm missing the hugs, that physical contact I miss, but I love being able to connect with so many readers.
I agree. I really love social media. It's a chance to, writing is very solitary. I mean, we're by ourselves a lot, and there's no one to talk to, really. My husband gets tired. It's like, is that a real friend or is that a book friend? So I love being able to reach out and talk to people who are passionate about what I do, because I'm passionate about it. And I get a lot of help. I do a lot. I do write 3 books a year, and I have created a couple of new series, and I can't think of like a great name for the pizza place or the coffee place. So I enjoy that my readers, I'm starting a new series in a town called Wishing Tree, and they came up with, I had one good name, Wrap Around the Clock. It's a wrapping store, but they did everything else. And my assistant made a map for me, so I've got all of that. I'm putting all their last names in the books as I write them. So where else can you have this group that will help you? I love the pet pictures and all of that, but I'm with you. I miss the hugs. I was going to be on tour. My book got moved because of the pandemic. So I was going to be at the end of May, and I was going to be on the road for 2 weeks. And it was funny when I was supposed to, it was like every day, oh, I would have been here. Oh, I would have been here. I would have been here. And then we were going to fly to San Francisco for this event. It was sad to lose that. By the way, this is just a little share. When we talked about the tour, I was in Toronto for a meeting, and we talked about the tour, and I said, this is how much time, and all of that, and got back fascinating questions. Will you drive places? It's like, we can drive. And I said, do not, once I'm home, I'm home. Do not get me back on an elevator, an airplane again. I will do what you want, but once I walk in the door, I'm never leaving. And then Susan and I talked about doing an event together, and I called my publicist. He said, you said you wouldn't get on an airplane once you were home. I can't make this work. And I said, well, I'll get on an airplane for her.
Same for you.
So yeah, but here we are, because no airplanes.
Yeah. And I also use readers for research sometimes, especially the Stars books, because I didn't know it was going to be a series. I didn't keep a Bible from the beginning. So if I need to know whose house had a swimming pool or what jersey, somebody's always reading that book. It's the laziest form of research available, and I love it, and I will continue to take advantage of it.
I like it for things like the weird things that are hard to research. I had a kid mess up in junior ROTC, which I didn't even know was a thing. I had a kid mess up, and it's like, would he get kicked out or not? Because it's a kid, so you want to. And so it was a fascinating discussion, and they really disagreed. And both their husbands were some significant thing in junior ROTC. And I thought, great, if we can't agree, then I can do what I want. So yay. Yeah. But you can't get that just, typing in Google. So I love the information that, you're right, they're all there, and they know things. And I'll send a note saying, does anybody know about this? And somebody always does.
Yeah, that's great.
Looks like we have quite a few Facebook questions. So we're going to have Patrick read some of those to you.
Ooh. Hey guys, woo-hoo! I guess I should take off my mask. First of all, I'd like to say thanks everybody for tuning in. You have a great audience here, including some special guests.
I love a special guest.
Yeah, I'll start by asking a few of these questions. Catherine asks, do you shut the door on your characters and walk away at the end of the day, or do they continue the story in your mind as you try to sleep at night?
Yeah. I'll go.
You walk away. Do you agree, Susan?
Go ahead, Susan.
I was just going to say, I don't think you walk away. Do you agree?
It depends. If the scene went well, I'm done. If there's something wrong, it's like a churn. It's like a blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just that mom tone. Mom. It's like, all right, I will fix you.
Do you guys subscribe to that theory that, you know, that the unconscious kind of works the story out in your mind when you're in the middle of writing a book?
If only.
If only?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
I think if it's I'm on track, then I can write my pages and I'm good. If it's not on track, there is a gnawing sense of wrongness, and it's at some point I start to listen and go back and try to figure out where I went awry.
All right, we have a relatively unknown up and coming author named Jane Ann Krentz. She has a question that she claims she's asking for a friend, which is, you each infuse your stories with a lot of tension. How do you do that without a murder?
That's a good question from the queen of murders. You know, here's one of the things I love about Jane's books. Sometimes she uses elements of the paranormal, and I have to say paranormal is not my favorite genre, but Jane does like paranormal light, like in her new book cover up. And I just absolutely loved it. She's just a great read. In terms of without a murder, well, I guess it takes great skill, Jane. What can I say?
All right, the more politically correct answer would be it's all about stakes, whether it's who's gonna kill you or are you gonna get asked to the prom. And while they don't on the surface seem like they're the same stakes, if they're the same to that person, then they're the same to the reader. So it's all about readers. It's all about character stakes. What do they have at stake? What is it going to cost them to get what they want? And the price of what they want, I'm moving to lecture mode. The price of what they want should increase as the story goes along.
Yeah, what she said.
Okay, let's see. Vicky asks, when COVID is over and the world is safe again, where's the first place you ladies would like to visit?
My favorite coffee house with my laptop. I don't work in coffee houses all the time, but I really miss being able to do that. And I also just miss my son's hugs and my daughter-in-law's and my grandkids. Basic stuff.
Yeah, I would love a pedicure. That would make me so happy.
I'll come to your house.
Okay.
Okay, here's kind of a standard question. Which is about your writing kind of process. How long does it usually take you to complete a manuscript? Does it vary, or do you have a, you've both shared that you have very different writing approaches. So Susan, Phillips is laughing here.
Go ahead, you bragger. Three books.
I do 3 books a year, so I need to be done in 4 months.
How does that work out to every day's schedule? Do you have a certain number of pages that you have to do, or words?
I do pages. I don't understand people who do word count because the math is so hard. 78,627, I can't add that to anything. So I do page count because it's just 15 I'm trying to add. I work 6 days a week.
I work 7 days a week.
Well, you are a better person. What can I say? No, 6 days. I have pets. They require a lot of maintenance. That's what the seventh day is for.
The seventh day might only be a half hour, actually, but
yeah.
I work by a timer instead of a page count. I set the timer for 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever. But every time I get up, I have to turn off the timer. And it just takes me forever. I took a year off after First Star I've Seen Tonight before I started Dance Away With Me. And it's pretty much 2 years to write a book. And it, you know, this is to her point. It has to do with my process. Thus, it takes me forever.
But it's worth it.
Yeah, well, you're accomplishing a lot with those three books a year too, babe. So I don't know. We have to, you know, this is that old saw where people say it is what it is. That is just so appropriate for my situation, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't do 2 years. I would have like so wandered so far. They would never find me. I couldn't do it. It's like, get it done before I kill them. That's really where. Otherwise, if it takes too long, it's like, you're so annoying. Stop talking. Yeah.
Here's a question that kind of deals with more with marketing and labels. Do you see a difference between what's called women's fiction and romance? Or are they the same thing?
They're not the same thing to me. To me, the romance, the focus is on the couple. And in women's fiction, the focus is on the women's relationships. They may or may not fall in love, but we are focused on them. In mine, there's never a male point of view. In the romance, it's usually a 50-50 split on point of view for the characters. So it that is the difference. And I think what I look at is different in romance versus what I focus on in women's fiction. It's more, where are these women in their lives and what is informing that, as opposed to there is something going on, but they're going to meet this great guy and fall madly in love and it's going to be fantastic. So for me, they're really different.
I think also women's fiction is such a big, big term.
Yeah.
Because some women's fiction, you do want to kill yourself when you're done because the ending is so depressing. And then some women's fiction is absolutely not.
It just lifts you up. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I want a strong love story in my books, but I also want more than that. I want to see other kinds of relationships too. So I think that's it's a big term.
I agree.
I have a question. Talina is a question for Susan Mallory. And she asked, have you ever been in the process of writing a book and been interrupted by another idea? You do three books a year.
Yes. I do get ideas and I keep a file and they go into the file. And once I've written it down, then it's a test. If it comes back three or four times, it's probably going to be a book. If it was an interesting idea and I read it 2 years later, it's like, oh yeah, that was interesting. It has to work for it. They don't all get to be books. They have to, like,
exactly, you know, the same thing. I create that file. And if it keeps coming back, then you know, it's something that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. I will ask one last question here. Barbara asks, you know, who are your favorite authors to read?
Well, I love reading Susan. Kristen Higgins, by the way, has a new book out called Always the Last to Know, which I absolutely adored. I mentioned Jane Ann Krentz. I love her books. For a thriller, I like reading Christina Dodd. Kristen Hanna, love reading her books. Just so many. I know I'm leaving out all kinds of people. I was thinking about too, about how readers sometimes want to stay in their niche in terms of comfort zone. And so we have white readers who have missed the whole category of African-American fiction. And if you, if that resonates with you, pick up Beverly Jenkins, one of her blessing books. She's created this incredible community, can never wait for a new book to come out in that series. If you want an insight into what it's like to be Indian living in the United States, Sonali Deb does great work. She has sometimes Bollywood themes going on. She's doing kind of Jane Austen takeoff right now. So, it's not just up to the publishers to be looking for diversity. There's a lot of criticism about the publishers, but readers, we need to take some responsibility too, and sometimes read outside our comfort zone and discover really, really great, great authors.
What she said. That That would be my, no, I'm not kidding. That was my list.
Yeah.
What role does location play when it comes to your stories? And specifically, Susan Elizabeth Phillips, you mentioned that you were on a trip in Sicily and that inspired something to do with Dance Away With Me. Can you talk about that?
Location is almost always a character in my book. In Dance Away With Me, the way this book started is I was on a hiking trip in Sicily in a not great hotel. I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning with this idea that I was going to write a book about a Sicilian midwife living in a rural part of Sicily in the 1950s. The light of day told me that this might be a little tough to do. And she was going to be this grieving widow. And so I lived with that one for a while and managed to give the contemporary setting that I'm much more comfortable in. But that is usually, I don't tend to get a lot of inspiration when I travel. I travel a lot, but I always feel like setting is a character in the book and the reader really wants to feel that setting that characters are in.
Yeah, I agree. Character, setting is character, and it is, it just gives us so much depth in the stories. I love doing interesting settings, and interesting doesn't have to mean exotic. It's just interesting to, I mean, no one would call one of the United States exotic, but in Dance Away With Me, it is unruly how the setting is unruly, and it really does modify the story in many ways. Sometimes if your heater breaks, things happen that are exciting. So I love exploring different settings. I love making the ordinary special. And then every once in a while, you got to have a rich guy with a great house. So I like that too. We refer to that as like architecture porn or food porn in the books. It's like, ooh, we need some more of that.
Since both of you have written books that are connected by setting or by characters, what are some of the advantages as an author to that? Are there disadvantages? Like I know in one case, Susan Mallory, you kind of wrote such a small setting you couldn't do much more with it. Yes.
Yes, you need more than 65 people. Setting is fun, and a series, I like going back to the same place because I like having my secondary characters, assuming I like them. I like seeing them again. It allows me, I can set up early a book I'm going to do in 3 years. It's like, oh yeah, I'm doing that now with a new series. And I have this character, Paisley, and I'm going to give her a chocolate maker because I love her. And that would be amazing to have a man in your life who made chocolate. So there you go. That is probably coming in 3 years. But I enjoy series a lot. It's just, you can really, I have messed up and written myself into, there are things happen, like Fool's Gold was only supposed to be 3 books and then it became like 22. And I had to make some mistakes to get the books to work in another, do another trilogy and another trilogy. So every now and then you've got to pierce the veil and there's just a mistake. And so that part's hard, but I love it. I love going back. I love reading series. I love writing series.
And I like that idea of going back to a community that you already know. I've had to take some liberties with chronology to make things work. And I've just put an author's note saying, you know, this is what I'm doing. This is the story you wanted. And I have to take some liberties with chronology to do it. But I do like going back to those familiar settings. It's a comfort zone.
And it's fun to catch up with the other characters.
It is, really is, yes.
Both of you have done a number of interviews over the years. What is the one question no one ever asks you that you wish someone would?
Oh, wow. I've had really good interviews. The weirdest one for me was the summer that 50 Shades came out. And everybody, I was doing a lot of radio back then, and everybody wanted to talk about 50 Shades of Grey. And after my first interview, I thought, you've got to solve this problem because you're on book tour and it needs to be about your book. And so I spent a couple hours sitting there thinking, how am I going to deal with 50 Shades of Grey? And I thought, I solved the problem and said, I love 50 Shades of Grey because now when people say how sexy your books are, I can say they're between 28 and 30 shades. So you have a good frame of reference. So yeah, but no, I've had great interviews.
I was doing a book tour when 50 Shades came out, and unlike you, I saw it coming way ahead of time, so I didn't read the books. And it was just because I could say, oh gosh, I haven't read those books. So I did take the coward's way out. And I can't think of what question I would be asked that because I have so little filter, I've probably answered way more things over the years than people actually even wanted to know.
We did have one more Facebook question. I'm paraphrasing, but are there any plans for your books to be made into a miniseries or a television movies or transferring to another medium?
Susan, what about you? I'm curious.
I am very available to be purchased for not even a lot of money by almost any production company, so they should contact my agent.
Yeah, and your books would be great for Netflix series. I mean, we've got those two, the Virgin River series that Robin has going on Netflix
now. Which is great.
Great, and they have picked up another one of her series. And we've got Julia Quinn's Bridgerton series that's going to be coming out that Shonda Rhimes is doing. And of course, I think it all started with Outlander. And that, what was so brilliant about that, as opposed to a feature film, is they had all of that time.
The time.
The story. And the other side of the coin is readers want a film of the book they read. And because they're different mediums, you don't get that. So I'm always on the fence about this. A longer treatment, a Netflix kind of thing would be interesting. Feature film, I don't think so.
Well, I think the feature film thing is more complicated simply because the books are inherently internal and the film people want a more external series. Whereas in a mini series or an ongoing series, you explore different stories every time. And I think it just works better. I had one experience, Marry Me at Christmas was made into a Hallmark movie and it was just fun from start to finish. Sadly, we had a new puppy, so I could not go to the set because I had promised I would not leave my husband alone with the newborn. But everybody was wonderful and it was fun to see. And the star has the most beautiful coat wardrobe in the world. I want her coats and her hair, all of that. I want that for myself.
I think we're just about out of time. So I want to take a moment to thank both of you for sharing yourselves with our readers and the store's customers. Remind customers that we do have copies of Dance Away With Me that are signed personally by Susan Elizabeth Phillips, and we will have signed copies of The Friendship List. It's easy to order. Just go online to the bookstore's website or to the author's websites. They provide links. And please, thank you again, Susan and Susan, for being
here. Thank you.
I got something to say. Don't leave us yet.
Okay.
For people who don't know, John Charles, our interviewer, has been such a staunch supporter of the romance industry for so many years, first in the public libraries, now with books. He has reviewed books. He's treated the genre with respect. He is actually the king of the romance genre. You are looking at him right now. And John, we talk about you behind your back all the time, and we always talk, we talk lovingly of you, and we send you our love and we send you our thanks. You're just the best.
Oh, Susan.
Yes, you do a great job. Thank you.
That's so sweet of you. Thank you. I'll send you the check next week. Thank you again. And thank you for joining us.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks.
And we're clear.
Yay.
That was great.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was fun.
Oh, you were terrific. I loved your answers. Very good.
You had a lot of people watching too.
Oh, good. And we'll share this on our property, and I know Susan will as well.
Terrific. Thanks again, Susan.
Thank
Have
you.
A great rest of your day.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.